Washirabu.
Mm-hmm.
There are other verses like eat and do this, eat
yes.
and do that.
Okay.
So according to Greek scholars, they say that it's after completion of eating, okay,
yes.
the advancement or what it's talking to the verse, like do something, eat, do this, eat, do that. It's not in the same. Even the verses of Salat and Zakat,
yes.
they are mostly regarding Salah as a completion, then Zakah as
yes.
the second stage.
Okay.
But the thing that we find in this verse
yes.
Regarding giving Zakat,
yes.
it's not in two different stances
mm-hmm. yes.
that once Salah is over, okay. then give Zakat.
Yes.
This is you could say, a miracle of this verse that
yes.
Zakat is implemented in Salah.
In Salah.
At,
or at
Salah
the same time.
In the question.
Yes, yes.
Not
yes.
like after
okay.
Salah is
yes.
over, then do another kind of act.
Yes. On the
within.
Same spot at the same time, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Within okay. that same phase.
Yes.
Of which, even if there are verses, you will find this one to be outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it has Salah and Zakat in the same, but it does not denominate Salah, then Zakat after Salah is over.
So how is it that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala explicitly in this ayah refers to the concept of Wali, that your Wali is Allah, His apostle, and what? And the faithful people who do so and so. Referring
to
Imam.
After this verse was released, the Holy Prophet advanced
yes.
and said this verse was released for Ali alayhi
salam. In praise of Ali alayhi salam.
And when he says like that, it's not like God is saying that your guide is Allah and
yes.
His Prophet
okay.
and anyone who gives ring at the time
yes.
of prayer. What he's saying is Allah and Prophet is known, that
okay.
Allah is Allah, Prophet is Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam.
That's right.
He was trying to identify Ali by not mentioning his
okay.
name and saying what he did.
Yes.
That will be ascribed to him till the day of Qiyamah of this, because
right.
there are a lot of people that came after Amirul Mumineen and tried to do the same
yes.
incident, but they were not successful.
That's all right. And when you say raka'un, you know, we are using the plural, isn't it? Expressions in order to identify who are these people. According to so many exegetes, it may refer to the progeny of Ali alayhi salam, the Ahlul Bayt too, because this has been the habit of so many of the next imams of the next generations of Ali ibn Abi Talib to give charity when in Salat, okay? So that's all right. Allah explicitly has explained
yeah.
who is the Wali and who has to be followed in the Holy Quran. Thank you very much, Brother Suhail, for a nice elaboration regarding Ayah 55 of Surah Al-Ma'idah. And is it in contradiction with distracting Ali in prayer or in Salat, as it was, for example, said in Nabard al-Saffin, in Saffin battle, you know, the arrow was taken out of the feet of Ali alayhi salam without noticing it. So how is it that with notice and with attention, Ali intentionally does this even in prayer? It was a nice elaboration from your side. Thank you much, Brother Swag.
Thank you.
Thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban li aliyin wa husayin wa hasan. Li aliyin wa husayin wa hasan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي حسين وحسن.
of colors. Tehran has been the destination for many migrating ethnicities in different eras. Turks, Lors, Kurds, Baluchis, Arabs, Fars, Shias, Sunnis, Jews, Armenians, Zoroastrians, and in short, hundreds of customs and traditions and millions of views are living side by side in this metropolitan city of 13 million people. The interesting thing is these ethnicities still have their own traditions even after so many years of living in Tehran. For example, the Turkmens, they've been seen on many occasions in different parts of the city. They resemble the people in East Asia, and their special costumes have always caught my attention. I wonder how they've managed to preserve their own authenticity among the myriad of different styles, or how they've managed to adapt themselves with this society, with this cultural and political structure, where they are considered a minority group. ...101 years ago, after the Safavid dynasty was toppled, Turkmens migrated to the lush green regions in the northeastern Iran and settled down near Gorgan. The Turkmens were mostly nomads and would migrate to different parts in different seasons, but as time went by, they chose a different lifestyle, sedentism. The main population of Turkmens is concentrated in Turkmenistan, but you can find other clans of Turkmens in other countries like Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria. The Turkmens in Iran are divided in three main clans, namely the Tekes, the Guklans, and Yomuts. Each of these clans is comprised of different ethnicities. The population of Turkmens in Iran is about 2 million people. Many big cities are known for the people in the world with symbols. For example, the Eiffel Tower in Paris, France, or the Statue of Liberty in New York, the U.S., or Burj Al Arab in Dubai, or our own Siyosipol in Isfahan. And this is Gumbad. Gumbad is a 60-meter tower made with bricks. For the existence of the very tower, the city was named Gumbad Kavus. The majority of the people in the city are Sunni Muslims and Turkmens. Color, color, and yet more color. It seems the people here love colors. You can see any color you've seen in nature on the clothes of the Turkmen people. Red, green, yellow, blue. Thanks to the colors, people look fresh. Wherever in the city I went, I only saw the smiles on the people's faces. The Turkmens, who follow Hanafism as their faith, do not usually save their money. The important thing for them is to live a better life and enjoy the money they earn. They take advantage of the smallest opportunities to be happy. They're very friendly and real believers. When it comes to religious obligations, they're very committed people. Almost all Turkmens in Iran are Hanafis. Hanafism is one of the branches of Sunnism in Islam. The denomination has the largest number of followers among the four sects of Sunnis. Anyone can easily find these facts on the internet. I was looking for something else. I was looking for life. I really wanted to know how the Hanafis in northeastern Iran, or I'd better say the Turkmens, live. How did they manage to fend for themselves in Iran, where the majority of people are Shias? That's why I traveled to Gonbad Kavus and the adjacent cities several times. I got to know many people. One of those people was Mr. Niazi. He became the subject of my documentary. I'll start with my latest trip in March, when Mr. Niazi had just come back from the Hajj pilgrimage. As the Hanafi Turkmens are considered a minority in Iran, the Shias residing in this region are also considered a minority. But the Shia and Sunni Turkmens have managed to come up with a rule after years of coexistence, and that is respecting one another's beliefs. For example, here. This place is Imamzadeh Yahya's shrine. Imamzadeh Yahya was one of the descendants of Imam Ali. It is a pilgrimage site for the Shia minority in Gonbad Kavus, but it doesn't seem that it makes that much difference for the people in this region. I mean, the Shias and Sunnis stand behind the Zari, that's the lattice structure, in the shrine and ask Imamzadeh to fulfill their wishes. In my last trip to the northeast of Iran, Mr. Niazi and I went somewhere that was really interesting to me, the Qalicheshan Seminary School. It's about 80 kilometers away from Gonbad Kavus. When I looked at the structure from a distance, it didn't seem to be something new for me. I had already seen similar structures in other parts of Iran, but there were two things that were very interesting. First, in most of the villages around Gonbad, there are similar mansions that are considered seminary schools in the villages. Secondly, the numbers and figures used in the structure. Every brick in this seminary school is laid based on some principles and accurate calculations. There are four minarets that are built to represent the four Sunni caliphs. There are 23 chambers that stand for the 23 years that it took for the Quran to be revealed. Each chamber has 6,236 bricks, representing the 6,236 holy verses of the Holy Quran. To reach the Grand Master's office, you have to go up 12 steps. The 12 steps are built with the 12 Shia Imams in mind. The mansion was constructed about 150 years ago by Mr. Qalicheshan, an outstanding Sunni figure back then. In his trip to Mecca, Qalicheshan was respected by the Ottoman government. The Ottoman ruler, as a respect for the Sunnis in the neighboring Shia country, offered him help. Qalicheshan brought some architects to the region and paid the expenses for the construction of the mansion with the help of the Ottoman government in order to promote the Sunnis. A few years ago, a grand mosque was built next to the Qalicheshan Seminary School. The mosque's capacity is more than the population of the village. A few kilometers away from the Qalicheshan building, there is a city called Kalaleh. It has a seminary school as well. Quran recitation competitions are held on a monthly basis in this seminary. Every month, many Turkmen participants come here to take part in the competition and be judged by the Sunni masters. Mr. Niazi told me that many Quran reciters and memorizers find their ways to the national competitions through the competitions that are held rotationally every month in different parts of the regions. But as for the Turkman's livelihood, as I said, I went to one of the successful Turkman people, I mean Mr. Behruz Niyazi. Mr. Behruz Niyazi, unlike his family name, meaning a person who is in need, thanks to his years-long hard work and thank God, does not need worldly assets. He is one of the successful citizens of this city, Gonbat Kavus. He has 3 children, and during the couple of days I stayed with them, I realized that he cares a lot about his family and loves them tremendously. Iranians have some traditions. It has a special place among all of them, and it's really important to observe them, like respecting their elders, especially their parents, or observing the Nowruz traditions or religious ceremonies or traveling. Turkmans are no exception. They love to travel. If the travel is to God's house, it is of utmost significance. This is Mr. Niyazi, the senior, the elder in the Niyazi family. He's Behruz Niyazi's father. When a Turkman goes back home from the Hajj pilgrimage, the relatives hold a ceremony that is very interesting. They shower the Hajj pilgrims with nilk candles and cash, just like a bride and groom. They welcome them warmly. Afterwards, the Haji gives the guests some water from the Zamzam well as a holy souvenir. They stand facing towards the Qibla in Mecca and make a wish and drink the water so they become blessed with the water from the Zamzam and their wishes will be fulfilled. In small and large cities, there must be some places to shore up the economy of the region. This is the beating heart of Gonbat Kavus's economy. An industrial township with 50 factories and workshops and 1,200 people who put food on the table by working in this place. In northeastern Iran, there are 3 dairy product factories that are modernized and facilitated with modern equipment. One of the factories belongs to Mr. Niyazi that is located in the industrial township. 250 people directly work in it. The capacity of the factory is about 100 tons of milk per day. The products are loaded onto about 60 trucks on a daily basis. In all mythical stories we've heard since we were children and have passed on from generation to generation until today, there's always been a champion, or I'd better say, a hero, who's risen up to defend the oppressed people and save them from the tyranny of an oppressive ruler. Besides their swords and shields, the heroes had something else that was among the main characters in the stories. I mean, a horse. This spacious stable belongs to Mr. Niyazi, where about 30 horses are kept. Horses of renowned and good breed. Most of them are Turkmen. For example, Cobra, who's now become a little old. Some years ago, Cobra was among the winners of horse racing. Keeping these horses costs a lot, as well as purchasing them. They're bought at exorbitant prices. For example, this Australian giant. I didn't even dare get close to it. It seems only 2 or 3 people can ride it, and it doesn't like me that much. Turkmens have a good income through raising horses. There are 30 clubs and over 2,400 horses in Gonbat Kavus. If each horse is valued at $40,000 only in the region of Turkmans, I mean northeast of Iran, the horses are worth $96,000. About noon that day, it was a Friday, we hit the road to see another part of the city as well. I mean the Grand Mosque in Gonbat. On our way to the Grand Mosque, I saw Sunni Turkmens who had put on their best clothes to join a spiritual gathering. The majority of the people in the city are Hanafi Sunnis. The Friday prayers in here, like other parts of Iran, are held very passionately. The prayers and the sermons by the Friday prayers leaders and the speeches by the guests were very interesting and effective. I said my prayers along with my Sunni brothers, alongside each other and facing towards the same Qibla. In northeastern Iran, a tribe lives that's known as Turkmen. They earn a living through hunting and raising cattle. Turkmen, women, and men are skillful horseback riders as well, who flaunt their skills with the purebred Turkmen horses on the green plains like the wind. These sentences are descriptions about the Turkmens in Iran, men and women who are fast horseback riders. This place is Gombad Kavus's horse racing track, a place that houses many horseback riders from all across the country and gathers everyone together. Like many big stadiums in the world, this place generates a lot of revenue. From the vendors, the horseback riders, and the owners of the horses, and the lucrative market of betting, the excitement in this place is indescribable. Women, men, young and old, get together in this place for their passions for the horses they somehow consider as theirs and hope their horses cross the finish line first. Up north, down south, back east, and out west of Iran are brimming with different cultures and traditions. The cultures that might be very different from each other, but they managed to live together for hundreds of years. Before packing up and moving towards Gombad Kavus, I was really worried. I was worried how I was going to come to terms with a completely different culture, or how a different culture could come to terms with a stranger like me. But after living with the Turkmans for 10 days, I managed to find many differences that did not exist between us. I managed to find many differences that don't exist between us. There's not much difference between me as a Shia who lives in Tehran and a Sunni person who lives in Gombad Kavus. We're both Muslims and pray facing towards the same Qibla, and we're both living in Iran, in a country like everywhere else in the world. The person who respects other people's beliefs achieves success and makes efforts to attain their goal. As a prominent Iranian poet, Saadi, says, "If you don't tolerate my pain, you won't get any treasure. He who worked got the wage."
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Officials of Yemen's Ansar Allah movement have emphasized that the United States and Britain are trying to continue the aggression and siege of Yemen and prevent any meaningful peace being achieved in the country. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The website of Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. The Foreign Ministry of Yemen's National Salvation Government has severely censured the United Kingdom over its criminal approach towards the impoverished and war-wracked Arab country, stating that its policies have led to the serious deterioration of the Yemeni people's sufferings as it torpedoes any attempt aimed at establishing a nationwide peace. The Yemeni Foreign Ministry said in a statement that London is involved in everyday hostilities being committed against the Yemeni nation and stands brazenly on the side of Saudi-backed thieves and terrorists who were deposed by the Yemeni people. It stressed that the latest remarks by British Ambassador to Yemen, Richard Oppenheim, clearly attest to London's criminal role in exacerbating the suffering of the Yemeni people and explicitly shows that Britain is chiefly accountable for the maximum pressure campaign against Yemen, the blockade of Yemen, and the starvation of the Yemeni people. The statement pointed out that the British ambassador to Sana'a, Richard Oppenheim's comments, have brought shame on all Britons, and acknowledged Britain is engaged in war crimes being committed against the Yemeni people. It read, "These crimes, which are being committed without any reservations, give the Yemeni nation the full right to pursue and punish British officials through all available legal channels." The head and deputy head of Yemen's so-called Presidential Leadership Council reviewed the current situation in the country in a meeting with Richard Oppenheim in the Saudi capital Riyadh on 10th of January. The Presidential Leadership Council chairman, Rashad Al-Alami, briefed the British ambassador to Yemen on retaliatory attacks on oil facilities and what he claimed the implications of these attacks on the humanitarian and economic situation in the country. Richard Oppenheim said Britain supports the Saudi-backed government of Yemen and claimed the coordination of so-called efforts to ensure that 2023 is a year of peace for the Yemeni people. The Yemeni Foreign Ministry stressed that Britain is apparently prolonging the Yemeni war, further deteriorating the miseries of the Yemeni people, impeding peace efforts and resuming vicious military assault. It held Britain, the United States of America and their allies fully responsible for the status quo in Yemen and warned against the rise of tensions in the country. The ministry finally called on the United Nations and all freedom-loving people of the world to condemn Britain's flagrant intervention in Yemen's domestic affairs, which significantly obstructs restoration of peace in Yemen. The statement underlined the need for a balanced and thorough assessment of the economic situation in Yemen and effective measures to address the suffering of the Yemeni people. The English website of the Yemeni broadcaster Al Mayadeen Television Network has also covered the same story. The Sana'a government's Prime Minister Abdulaziz bin Habtour said on Saturday, 21st of January, Britain cannot have a hand in alleviating the economic suffering of the Yemeni people, explaining that Britain is a main party to the aggression in Yemen. The Yemeni Prime Minister told Al Masira television channel, the United Kingdom, through the multilateral agreement, will not give a single pound to ensure the success of the former mercenary regime's proposals, adding, it is going through an economic crisis and looking towards others for help. He said, the United Kingdom is still this day a main party to the aggression in Yemen, in terms of planning and execution. London is the protector of the former regime of mercenaries. Prime Minister Abdulaziz bin Habtour underlined, the British ambassador's recent statements are irresponsible. The former mercenary regime's decision to raise the price of the customs dollar rate is directed, in this circumstance, against the entire Yemeni people. It is noteworthy that Britain supported the measure in question, which was met with condemnation from Yemen as an extension of the blockade imposed on the country by the West and by the Saudi-led coalition of aggression. The British ambassador to Sana'a said the United Kingdom supports the economic measure implemented by the former mercenary regime, holding the Ansarullah movement responsible for the humanitarian situation in the country. This claim comes as the United States and Britain have been imposing a stifling air, land and sea blockade on Yemen. The Prime Minister of Yemen said, the British ambassador's statements publicly revealed the criminal role played by London in exacerbating the suffering of the Yemeni people. Prime Minister Abdulaziz bin Habtour added, the statements in question prove that London stands behind the economic warfare, including the policies of blockade and starvation. The Associated Press has also covered the same story. A new report said recently weapons supplied by the United Kingdom and the United States to the Saudi-led coalition in war-torn Yemen killed at least 839 civilians and wounded 1,775 others in just over a year. The report by the charity Oxfam revealed that the Saudi-led coalition used weapons supplied solely by Britain and the United States in hundreds of attacks targeting innocent civilians in Yemen between January of 2021 and the end of February 2022. The 43-page Oxfam report, authored by Martin Butcher, Oxfam's policy advisor on arms and conflict, stated that an analysis of attacks showed that the Saudi-led forces used Western-supplied weapons in hundreds of relentless attacks against civilian targets in Yemen during this 14-month period. According to a report, of all the attacks by the Saudi-led coalition during the 14-month period, from January of 2021 through to February of 2022, airstrikes alone killed at least 87 civilians and wounded 136 others. The coalition attacks, 19 of which targeted medical institutions and ambulances, during this period included airstrikes by jet fighters as well as artillery attacks, missile attacks and drone attacks, in addition to casualties from landmines, road bombs and light arms. Martin Butcher, Oxfam's policy advisor on arms and conflict, said, it's just so relentless. People just find it so hard to escape the violence and the killing in Yemen. The report also found that in the attacks, the coalition used Western-made cluster munitions, weapons banned by international convention and customary law. Martin Butcher called on Western governments, particularly the United States of America and Britain, to immediately cease arms sales to Saudi Arabia for use in Yemen and to promote a permanent ceasefire and negotiations for a long-term settlement through his position as a member of the United Nations Security Council. Martin Butcher said, the government's really been not only arming Saudi Arabia, but also very reluctant to use their position in the UN Security Council to push for peace in Yemen. The United States of America and Britain are the main suppliers of weapons to Saudi Arabia, selling tens of billions of dollars worth of arms to Riyadh. For decades, Saudi authorities have been the lead importers of American-made and British-manufactured weapons. Saudi Arabia, in collaboration with its Arab allies and with arms and logistics support from the United States and Britain and various other Western countries, has launched a devastating war in Yemen in March of 2015. The objective of the war was to crush the Ansar Allah movement, which has been running the country in the absence of a functioning government, and to reinstall the Riyadh-friendly, unpopular regime of Abdul Rabbo Mansour Hadi.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to yet another episode of Islamic Upbringing. Today we have had the pleasure to invite Professor Salman Nakavi. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Dear listeners, Professor Nakavi is a faculty member at the Al-Mustafa University, and we have had this pleasure to have him in the studio. We, in this program, discuss your problems, questions related to the Islamic upbringing and different topics which have a very great deal with the Islamic upbringing of children. And the answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad and his family, may peace be upon them. Well, Professor Nakavi, in our previous episode, we have been discussing Islamic upbringing under the theme of love. And we came to certain points that love, if parents show love towards their children, and children sometimes out of curiosity ask their parents, how could you be so kind, how could you be so forgiving, how could you be so nice? And when asking these questions, you reply to them as that because Allah is so kind, because Allah is so forgiving. And we actually, our main concept was that whatever the thing parents do, because they are expressing love towards the children one or the other way, they should actually connect it always towards the ultimate love, ultimate cause of love, which is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So, Professor Nakavi, we have some two kinds of groups of people which emerge out into the societies. Some are who are very obedient towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and some who are disobedient. And the reason is, love. For example, those who are obedient, their reason comes out to be love. And those who are disobedient, their reason is fear. Well, as you said in the previous episode, this love and fear should not be intermingled.
I meant to say that when we're talking about the fear of Allah Almighty, though yes, it is true that many people, as Imam Ali alayhi salam says, that there are people who obey Allah Almighty and worship Allah Almighty because of the love of paradise.
Yeah.
And some obey him because of the fear of hellfire.
But the best form of worship is
that I love him because I love him and I consider him worthy of worship.
Yeah.
Therefore, I worship him and obey him. So that is the ultimate thing that we have to achieve, that we have to become aware of the fact that we need to understand what perfection is and what truth is, what the absolute reality is. That has to be understood and that has to be strived for. The love for the ultimate has to be ingrained in our minds and in our hearts. And that is very important. And how should we do that? Firstly, we should, in our own thoughts and feelings and actions, reflect this, that whatever we do is for the sake of the truth that is behind it, because of the absolute reality. I mean, when we talk about goodness, when we talk about good deeds, when we talk about things that have to be done, is not just because Allah Almighty has made them necessary or obligatory or wajib. Even Allah Almighty has made something obligatory because there lies behind it something which is for my salvation, for my welfare, for the welfare of mankind. Everything has a philosophy to it. Everything has a reason for behind it. And that is the ultimate truth. That is the ultimate perfection we strive for. So when we have been so much adapted to this thing, that everything we look for the truth and for the goodness in everything and in every action that has to be performed, actually we are looking for godliness. We're going after the ultimate, that is Allah Almighty. So if we inculcate in our children the love for truth, the love for goodness, the love for perfection, they will be tuned to become loving Allah Almighty, because they're reaching out to something which is excellent, which is perfect. The absolute truth is Allah Almighty. The absolute perfection and goodness is Allah Almighty. So in our own thoughts and in the thoughts of our children, if we are able to inculcate and fine-tune them to this, that we are after the truth. If we want to do something, if our behavior should reflect that.
Yeah.
Our good behavior is something which reflects that goodness and perfection.
Yes.
Automatically, indeed. The result would be that our children would be striving to do something which is
different.
Different, it's good, it's correct, has excellence in it. So if that is inculcated, that is actually the love for goodness. Yeah.
We'll discuss more on this, Professor Nakavi, after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Nakavi, and we're discussing the theme of love under the umbrella of Islamic upbringing. Well, Professor Nakavi, there are some since kids are kids and they are not enough mature, and by the time, how do we make them realize the being wise of Allah? We say Allah is all Hakim. He is wise, and he knows the philosophy behind the things. But how do we make that understand to our children? Because they sometimes ask us, why only me? Even if we are in some difficult situation, we often hear children asking us, why me?
True. Of course, that has to be managed in a way that we make a balance between things, as we have always been saying, that there has to be a balance. Now, if we are, as you said, forgiving all the time, if we forgive and overlook mistakes, and we don't warn our children, we don't
punish them,
make them realize that they have made a mistake. It should be also, it's not that all the time we're trying to express that love and letting them off for their mistakes, letting them off for their wrongdoings. No, both things have to be managed. if we have to show our forgiveness, we also have to make them realize that they have made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And they may be sometimes scolded for it. They may be punished for it. That should be a part of the natural thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the child should not come up with this feeling, why me? No. He comes because it comes to him because we're overdoing one thing. Either we have pampered him so much that okay. He feels bad when once upon a time we try to scold him. Or the other extreme, we're always scolding him and always punishing him. And then he comes to the feeling, why me? No, so the balance has to be maintained. We have to show our love and we have to show our
displeasure. Well, add to it.
But this also has to be made, this has to be inculcated in him, that this anger is a result of the love. So we need to tell him, look, oh, I love you, I care for you, therefore I'm punishing you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because I feel bad about it. I feel bad about the fact I'm not being offended. I feel bad because
it's your personality that's going to get affected.
So it's my love for you and the love of Allah for you. And I want you to love Allah because of His goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And everything which has goodness in it reflects Allah's mercy upon us, that He wants us to become good. So if we are able to inculcate in our children the love for goodness, as is very natural, there are certain natural traits that are there in human beings: love of knowledge, love of beauty, love of goodness.
Yeah.
So if that is brought out, automatically people will start loving Allah Almighty.
Indeed. We'll discuss more on this after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa sallam said, raise your children to have three features: love for your Prophet, love for his household, and reciting the Quran.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Naqavi. And Professor Naqavi, we have been discussing certain important things. We discussed before going to the break that there are two kinds of personalities. There are two kinds of behaviors which result into one kind of personality, who always say, as adults or as childs, why only me? I remember certain friends, even in my college time, used to say, Allah has got some personal issue with me. Allah has got some personal problem with me. That's why He always whenever the other matchmates would actually give sympathy, that it's a test, it's that you have to pass it. And then I remember people saying that Allah has some personal issue with me. So you're saying these adults are the results of either being extremely pampered or being extremely shown displeasure at home.
Both ways are extremes which should be refrained from. Of course, when it comes to our adult life, we face many difficulties and calamities and problems and issues, losing something which is dear to us, losing some money, losing some job, losing something which is we like to have. So we have to reflect upon the reason for that. It is something because what we're doing is wrong. We are not doing the proper thing. We're not planning properly. We're not carrying out things by taking into our minds the results and consequences of an action. So we can't blame everything upon Allah Almighty. We should, number one, blame ourselves.
Yeah.
Because Allah Almighty has created a beautiful world. Everything has a very a systematic way. Every effect has a cause. Everything comes upon us because there's a cause to it. Now, sometimes some causes are there. We have control over some causes of our own problems.
Yeah.
And some things are not within our control. So those which we can control and manage, we need to control and manage ourselves. For example, if we're not making the proper decision, taking the proper decision, we're not consulting people who are professionals, who are experts. We take a decision. For example, at school or college, what course are we going to take? What profession we're going to follow? We need to, you know, think about it. We need to discuss. We need to consult and take the proper decision. We should look upon ourselves as what our personality is, what our traits are, what our aptitude is. We need counseling for that, to take the proper decision.
And so parents play a great role in counseling.
Parents also play a role. The basic role is there, of course. But later on, it becomes our own problem. So if we're taking the wrong decisions and the things are coming our way which we are not happy with, then we should reflect upon the things which we have done ourselves, what mistakes we have made. And sometimes, of course, despite doing all the things that are required, sometimes things happen to us which are not in our control. So there, yes, earthquakes, disasters. Maybe you're in an accident caused by someone else.
Yeah.
You face the consequences of
the
that.
The tragedy, yeah.
So things are there which are not in our control, and that's all a part of the beautiful system Allah Almighty has created, because there has been, things are based on cause and effect. Things have been given, human beings have been given the free will to act as they wish. They can act properly, they can act improperly. So these are things which are of a philosophical nature, of course. We can't expand upon this theme. But basically, no one can be singled out and say to him, look, I have a special problem with Allah Almighty. No, that's not correct.
So we get back to the concept that extreme pampering or extremely showing displeasure and punishing our child results in a personality who would actually develop this kind of attitude that Allah has problem with him, or everyone kind of has problem with him.
Also, it depends upon how you ideologically train them.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Professor, for being with us. Inshallah, we'll discuss more in the upcoming episodes. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returns upon rest.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines this hour. The heads of the IEA and Iran's Atomic Energy Organization described the latest talks as constructive, saying that mutual cooperation will continue. The Russian Defense Minister pays a rare visit to troops deployed in Ukraine as battles go on for the control of the Ukrainian city of Bakhmut. And Tunisians hold new protests against President Kais Saied over his growing power and what they see as a crackdown on opponents.